Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
The court is not self-policing. The court is not dealing with the obvious conflicts of interest. We need a mandatory code of ethics for the Supreme Court, and we need it now.
President Biden lays out his plan to reform the U.S. Supreme Court, calling for term limits, an ethics code, and an end to presidential immunity. We'll speak to the Brennan Center about Biden's proposals and whether they have any chance of being enacted. Then we look at Ziklag, a secret organization of wealthy Christians trying to sway the election and change the country. We'll talk to Andy Kroll of ProPublica. Plus, we go to Venezuela, where Nicolas Maduro has been declared the winner of Sunday's election despite fraud claims by the opposition.
Quienes hizo este plan es la extrema derecha, esta extrema derecha.
The extreme right did this plan. They were screaming fraud 15 days before the elections. They didn't sign the agreement to recognize the election results.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The Palestinian Ministry of Health has declared an epidemic of polio after Israel's devastating assault decimated Gaza's health, water and sanitation infrastructure, leading to an outbreak of the viral disease. On Monday, health officials called on Israel to immediately halt its offensive in order to combat the spread of polio by restoring access to potable water, personal hygiene, sewage networks and waste collection. Displaced Palestinians sheltering in Khan Yunis say diseases are spreading rapidly.
We as mothers, along with our children, are suffering from skin diseases. Our skin has begun to show spots in both moms and kids, young and old. Everyone is starting to suffer from this problem. We have been struggling with a lack of cleaning supplies for a while, like shampoo, soap, sponges, chlorine. We are living in tents, in sand, among insects, lacking in hygiene.
DropSite News reports video posted online by an Israeli soldier shows the calculated demolition of a chief water facility in Rafah. In 2003, the U.S. human rights activist Rachel Corrie spent much of her time during the last month of her life helping to protect the water facility, also known as the Canada Well. Rachel Corrie was crushed to death by an Israeli military bulldozer later that year while nonviolently defending a Gaza home from demolition. In Israel, a group of far-right protesters, including at least one member of the Knesset, broke into two Israeli military bases Monday in an effort to prevent Israeli military police from detaining nine soldiers suspected of torturing Palestinian prisoners. The nine soldiers are reportedly being investigated for gang-raping a Palestinian prisoner at Sidi Tayman, a facility where prisoners from Gaza say they've been routinely beaten and tortured. Some prisoners held at the site had limbs amputated due to injuries sustained from constant handcuffing. The protesters who stormed the military bases on Monday included far-right Knesset member Zvi Suko, who is a member of the far-right finance minister Bezalel Smotrich's party. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has threatened a harsh response after blaming the Lebanese-based Hezbollah movement for Saturday's rocket attack that killed 12 Druze children and teenagers at a soccer field in the Israeli-occupied Golan Heights. Netanyahu's threat came as he visited the site of the explosion in the town of Majdal Shams in a part of Syria occupied by Israel since 1967. Hezbollah has denied involvement in the attack. As Netanyahu spoke, a crowd of Druze protesters gathered chanting, "Bibi is a murderer," holding up signs calling the Israeli leader a war criminal.
He's an unwelcome person in our place. He is a liar and corrupt. He is coming to use the bodies of our children to be on TV. We will not allow this to happen.
In Venezuela, anti-government protests erupted Monday after Nicolas Maduro was declared the winner of Sunday's election. Venezuela's National Electoral Council said Maduro won 51% of the vote, defeating the opposition candidate Edmundo Gonzalez. But opposition leader Maria Corina Machado claims she has proof of fraud.
En este momento,
at this moment, I am very excited to tell everyone that we have 73.20% of the voting tallies. And with this result, our president-elect is Edmundo González Urrutia.
Maduro and election observers accuse the opposition of attempting to stage a coup. Venezuela's attorney general accused Machado of attempting to hack election systems, saying the alleged cyber attack delayed reporting on vote tallies. International response to the election has been mixed. China, Cuba, Honduras, Russia, Iran and Nicaragua congratulated Maduro on his reelection. Mexico also said it would recognize the election results. Meanwhile, seven Latin American nations signed a joint letter calling for a complete review of the election results. Venezuela responded to the letter by pulling diplomatic staff from the countries: Argentina, Chile, Costa Rica, Peru, Panama, Dominican Republic, and Uruguay. We will have more on Venezuela later in the program. In climate news, the United Nations Children's Fund, UNICEF, is warning a severe drought affecting large swaths of southern Africa is threatening the lives of hundreds of thousands of children. Lesotho is the latest country to declare a state of national food disaster following Botswana, Malawi, Namibia, Zambia, and Zimbabwe. UNICEF warns more than 270,000 children across the region are expected to suffer from life-threatening severe acute malnutrition this year, which is on track to break last year's record as the hottest year in human history. In southern India, landslides triggered by torrential rains have killed 70 people with dozens more trapped under debris. Climate scientists say climate change has caused India's monsoon rainfall patterns to become more erratic. In Northern California, the Park Fire has exploded in size to become the sixth largest wildfire in state history. By Monday, the fire had consumed more than 370,000 acres across Butte and Tehama counties, an area nearly half the size of Rhode Island. Thousands of residents have been forced to evacuate their homes, including the entire town of Paradise, which was almost completely consumed by a massive wildfire in 2018. On Capitol Hill, police arrested eight climate activists with the youth-led Sunrise Movement Monday as they staged a sit-in protest outside the office of Ohio Republican Senator J.D. Vance. The group was highlighting the Republican vice presidential nominee's close ties to the fossil fuel industry. Some of the protesters spoke as they were led away in plastic handcuffs by Capitol Police.
J.D. Vance is selling out to oil billionaires while California burns to the ground. People I love are at stake. My future is at stake. And J.D. Vance does absolutely nothing. He's taking millions of dollars from the fossil fuel industry.
Our families are not for sale. Our families are not for sale.
According to the campaign finance watchdog Open Secrets, Senator J.D. Vance is among the top 20 U.S. lawmakers receiving oil and gas industry contributions. On Monday, the Sunrise Movement also staged protests outside the Democratic National Committee, calling out Vice President Kamala Harris's climate policies. The group said in a statement, quote, VP Harris has the opportunity to put forward a bold climate plan that mobilizes young voters and faces the scale of the climate crisis, unquote. In other J.D. Vance news, CNN has revealed new details about his long history of disparaging people who don't have children. In addition to his comments about so-called childless cat ladies like Kamala Harris, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, and Pete Buttigieg, Vance once described Democrats as, quote, childless sociopaths. During a podcast interview in 2021, he claimed childless Americans were making the country less mentally stable.
I worry that it makes people more sociopathic and ultimately our whole country a little bit less less mentally stable. And of course, you talk about going on Twitter. Final point I'll make is you go on Twitter and almost always the people who are most deranged and most psychotic are people who don't have kids at home.
A ban on most abortions has taken effect in Iowa after a state district judge lifted an injunction blocking enforcement of the law, which was signed by Republican Governor Kim Reynolds last year. On the campaign trail, Vice President Kamala Harris warned the new law adds to a growing reproductive health care crisis.
Today, Iowa put in place a Trump abortion ban, which makes Iowa the 22nd state in our country to have a Trump abortion ban. And this ban is going to take effect before many women even know they're pregnant. And what this means is that one in three women of reproductive age in America lives in a state with a Trump abortion ban. So what we need to do is vote, because I'm going to tell you something. When I am president of the United States, I will sign into law the protections for reproductive freedom.
On Monday, presidential candidate Kamala Harris also endorsed President Biden's plan to reform the U.S. Supreme Court that calls for term limits, an ethics code, and an end to presidential immunity. We'll have more on the story after headlines. In Illinois, a local sheriff has publicly apologized after one of his deputies fatally shot Sonia Massey in her own kitchen after she called 911 for help July 6. Sangamon County Sheriff Jack Campbell rejected calls to resign, but did apologize during a public meeting in Springfield, Illinois, Monday.
I am sorry. She called for help, and we failed her. That's all she did. That's all she did was call for help. And I'm going to say something right now that I've never said in my career before, that we failed. We did not do our jobs.
And the only person ever convicted over the notorious My Lai massacre of 1968 has died at the age of 80. Army Lieutenant William Kelly was convicted in 1971 of murdering 22 North Vietnamese civilians and sentenced to life imprisonment and hard labor at Fort Leavenworth Prison for his role in the massacre when U.S. soldiers killed more than 500 Vietnamese women, children and old men. Kelly ultimately served just 3 years under house arrest for the murders. His sentence was commuted by President Reagan. In 2009, Kelly issued a public apology for the massacre. That year, I spoke about Kelly's role at My Lai with investigative reporter Seymour Hersh, who first broke the story.
They all got up at 3 or 4 in the morning, jumped on choppers, and went to kill and be killed. You have to give them their due. And they got into the village, and there's no soldiers there. The intelligence was bad, as it always is. And they gathered people. There was no fire at all, really, just old women, men, and children making their heating up water for their morning rice. And they gathered them eventually into three large ditches and began to execute them. Kelly became infamous, but there were five or six first and second lieutenants that were also organizing it.
To see our coverage of the My Lai massacre, visit our website, democracynow.org. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in New York, joined by Democracy Now! Co-host Juan Gonzalez in Chicago. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
Well, President Biden's laid out his plans to reform the U.S. Supreme Court, calling for 18-year term limits, an enforceable code of ethics, and an end to presidential immunity. Biden's plan comes a month after the Supreme Court granted former President Donald Trump broad immunity from prosecution for crimes committed in office. Biden stopped short of calling for expanding the court. He outlined his plan Monday at the OBG Presidential Library in Austin, Texas, where he commemorated the 60th anniversary of the Civil Rights Act.
I'm calling for a constitutional amendment called No One Is Above the Law Amendment. It holds that there's no immunity for crimes former president committed while in office. I share our founders' belief the president must answer to the law. The president is accountable in the exercise of the great power of the presidency. We're a nation of laws, not kings and dictators. The second thing I'm asking for, we've had term limits for presidents in the United States for nearly 75 years after the Truman administration. And I believe we should have term limits for Supreme Court justices of the United States as well. Third, I'm calling for a binding code of conduct for the Supreme Court.
That was President Biden speaking Monday. Republican House Speaker Mike Johnson responded by accusing Biden of attempting to radically overhaul the Supreme Court. The House Speaker said the proposals would be dead on arrival in the House. We're joined right now in Washington, D.C. by Jennifer Ahern, senior counsel in the Brennan Center's Judiciary Program. Welcome to Democracy Now!, Jennifer. Why don't you start out by assessing President Biden's proposals that he made yesterday in Texas as he celebrated the Civil Rights Act, and also how much chance they have of getting passed now that we hear what the House Speaker has to say?
Good morning, Amy. Thank you so much for having us. It's great to join you. I would say this is a pretty big deal for those of us who care about the Supreme Court. President Biden, I think, is somebody who sees himself as an institutionalist and a champion of the importance of the rule of law and the role of the Supreme Court in upholding the rule of law. And so if he believes that these kinds of changes are necessary, I think the public already believes this. And so that he has come along and is lending his voice to this call is, I think, critically important for this moving forward. I understand Speaker Johnson's view, and I understand that that means this is perhaps a longer term project that we are engaged in. And I think politically, we have a ways to go before the views of the people and the common sense reforms of these kinds can actually make their way through the Washington process. But I think this is a really important moment in that long process. And we're just really grateful that the president has chosen this as one of the things to speak out on in his last 100 days in office.
Jennifer, the commission that President Biden established on Supreme Court reform submitted its report in late 2021. That's almost 3 years ago. Why did you think it took him so long to actually pursue some recommendations?
Well, I mean, actually, right, he specifically asked the commission not to give him recommendations. So it really didn't give him even that list, which I think really goes to show sort of how much movement there has been in his thinking on this in the last few years, right? That he didn't even want to consider recommendations in those early years of his administration. And so I think that is a sign of how far his thinking has come and how far, more broadly, the public's thinking has come on this issue. And so I think that really is why I think we are where we are today.
And what about this proposed 18-year term limit? How would that affect the court's stability and continuity if it were enacted?
I think it would put the court on a more sustainable path in terms of how it relates to the public and to public support for and views of the court's legitimacy. It's worth remembering that really the Supreme Court has nothing other than its legitimacy, right? There's no, it has no army, it has no power of the purse. You know, in our constitutional system, the court's legitimacy and the respect that we as a country have for it is really all it has. And so, something like term limits that would bring the court more in line in a very long-term, sustainable kind of way with where the public is and where and with the issues of the day, I think is really important to the court's overall legitimacy and putting it on that path.
So, Jennifer, if you could more specifically address the points that Biden is making, what would an 18-year term look like? And if there was an 18-year term, who would be off the court right now?
So the longest serving members of the court at the moment are Justice Thomas, Justice Roberts, and Justice Alito. Depending on exactly how you implement a reform like this, and there are lots of different ways to do it, you would probably see those folks rotating off first on the list. I would also say, in general, if you look at really big picture, what would this do? Remember that the president obviously is the one who nominates Supreme Court justices. And so you would see the whatever swings there are on the court in terms of partisan who appointed the justice, that would more closely track how presidential elections have gone over time. And that's really not what we see on the court right now. We see the appointees from President Donald Trump having, you know, having appointed three Supreme Court nominees, which is more than, you know, than any other president. So you would see some of that smoothing out over time. The New York Times also had a graphic this morning that showed that if term limits had been in effect in the past, we would see a 6-3 liberal majority at the moment, as opposed to the 6-3 conservative majority that we currently see. So that's sort of how you might want to think of it generally. And obviously, the specifics depend a little bit on how you actually put this into place.
Well, Jennifer Ahern, I want to thank you for being with us from the Brennan Center, speaking to us from Washington, D.C. In July, Democratic Congressmember Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez filed articles of impeachment against Justices Clarence Thomas and Samuel Alito over alleged ethics violations. The news outlet ProPublica revealed Thomas failed to disclose millions of dollars of gifts from billionaires, in one case accepting luxury trips virtually every year from right-wing megadonor Harlan Crow without disclosing them. The Supreme Court justices have since agreed to a code of conduct. On Thursday, Justice Elena Kagan became the first member of the Supreme Court to make a public statement in support of adding an enforcement mechanism to the new ethics code. Kagan spoke at an annual judicial conference held by the Ninth Circuit.
I think that the thing that that can be criticized is, you know, rules usually have enforcement mechanisms attached to them, and this one, this set of rules, does not. I think, you know, both in terms of enforcing the rules against people who have violated them, but also in protecting people who haven't violated them, I think a system like that would make sense.
For more on this, we're joined by Andy Kroll, investigative reporter for ProPublica, part of the team who just won the Pulitzer Prize for Public Service Journalism for its investigation into politically connected billionaires lavishing luxurious gifts on Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas and Samuel Alito. Also, the fact that they support organizations that have cases before the Supreme Court. Your response to President Biden and to Justice Kagan?
I think the statement from President Biden and especially the comments from Justice Kagan show how much the conversation around Supreme Court reform has changed in just the last 12 to 18 months. I mean, thinking back to what Jennifer from the Brennan Center said just a moment ago, the difference between when the Presidential Commission did its work and put forward its not recommendations back in 2021 to where we stand today is pretty stark. The fact that President Biden is using the bully pulpit as a lame duck president to push for these reforms, to really drive this conversation, and then the fact that a sitting justice in Elena Kagan is saying, this new code of conduct, a code of conduct that was issued in response to ProPublica's reporting, is not enough, that it does not have enforcement. It does not have teeth in the way that the code of conduct for every other federal judge does, I think really shows how far this conversation has come in just a year. Obviously, it has a ways to go, given the politics of Congress right now and what we heard Speaker Johnson say. But we've never had this kind of conversation about Supreme Court reform in modern history. So that alone is a notable thing and just shows the, you know, impact, one, of investigative journalism, but also the impact of this decline in public trust for the U.S. Supreme Court.
Andy Kroll is an investigative reporter with ProPublica. We're going to go to break. And when we come back, we're going to look at his recent piece, Inside Ziklag, the secret organization of wealthy Christians trying to sway the election and change the country. Stay with us.
Do you? house with a pickle in my mouth.
Playing in the street, look at me outside waving. Just two little kids out there misbehaving. We thought we were just messing around till we met that man in the thorny crown. It taught us that tricks and mischief lead to Satan. So from now on, there's no misbehaving.
Misbehaving by Amy Lee and Baby Billy from The Righteous Gemstones. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, War, Peace, and the Presidency. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump made headlines this week after suggesting that this year's election could be the last U.S. election if he wins in November. Trump made the comment Friday in Florida at Turning Point Action's Believers Summit.
Christians, get out and vote just this time. You won't have to do it anymore. Four more years, you know what? It'll be fixed. It'll be fine. You won't have to vote anymore, my beautiful Christians. I love you, Christians. I'm a Christian. I love you. Get out. You got to get out and vote. In 4 years, you don't have to vote again. We'll have it fixed so good you're not going to have to vote.
For more on who's backing Trump's efforts, we look at a secret organization of wealthy Christians who are working to purge more than a million voters from the rolls in battleground states and mobilize Republican voters to back Trump. It's called Ziklag. The news outlets ProPublica and Documented obtained thousands of Ziklag's internal files and found the group has divided its 2024 activities into three different operations: Steeplechase, which uses churches to get out the vote, and Watchtower, which aims to rally voters around opposition to transgender rights. The third operation, called Checkmate, focused on funding so-called election integrity groups as laid out in this Ziklag member strategy video.
Voter irregularities are rampant across all 50 states, but especially pronounced in the battleground states. Public polling confirms Americans have lost confidence in electoral integrity. With the federal election already in full swing, more must be done to ensure fair elections in the most important republic in the world. That's the purpose behind Operation Checkmate and its practical approaches to both get out the vote and clean electoral rolls through our coalition partners. Through these efforts, we have the opportunity to play a significant role in the upcoming election.
ProPublica reports Ziklag's mission is to take dominion over seven spheres of public life, which it calls mountains: business, science and technology, family, arts and media, church, education and government. For more, we continue with Andy Kroll, investigative reporter for ProPublica. His recent piece, Inside Ziklag, the secret organization of wealthy Christians trying to sway the election and change the country. Andy, lay it out for us.
Ziklag is a secretive network of ultra-wealthy Christians, conservative Christians, who have this two-part vision for this country. One is to get heavily involved in the 2024 elections in the ways that you just described, mobilizing pastors, knocking people off the voting rolls, demonizing trans people to motivate conservative voters. But then looking toward the 20 and 30 year horizon, Ziklag's goal is nothing less than moving the country toward a state of Christian nationalism, having biblical worldviews, quote-unquote biblical truth, shaping, influencing every part of American culture, those seven mountains that you described. So this really is, as one expert we quoted in the story told us, a vision for Christian supremacy.
Ziklag mean?
Ziklag, the name, refers to a biblical reference about David taking refuge during his struggle with King Saul. The analogy here, of course, is that the Christians in this group apparently feel that they are under siege and that this group is their refuge, but then the place from which they plan their campaign, their assault to take back American culture.
In a Ziklag member briefing video that you obtained at ProPublica, one of Ziklag's spiritual advisors, Lance Wallnau, a Christian evangelist and influencer, laid out a plan to deliver swing states by using an anti-transgender message to motivate conservative voters who are exhausted with Trump.
If we can get the left to own their position on LGBTQ,
back to this,
the country's topic. Already drifted on the homosexual issue, but on transgenderism,
yep,
there's a problem. And